Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and this week we have what I think is a new Nature Now tradition. International Coastal Cleanup Day is coming this Saturday, September 19th. And every year since 2018, just before the third weekend in September, I have shared a conversation I had with Janine Boire, the executive director of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. And we had this conversation first in 2018, and we talked trash, plastic trash, in the world's oceans and what ordinary people are doing to help reduce that serious problem. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. So just a little hint, this is another sighting from my bird feeder. So as I look at the news lately, trying to look for good news, the best news of the past week or so, in my mind, is the birth of the new baby orca in our southern resident killer whale population. Many of us will remember the poignant story from the summer of 2018 when a mother orca, known as J35 or Talaqua, spent 17 days carrying her dead calf in the waters of the Salish Sea. I have to believe that creatures as intelligent as orcas have emotions. And Talaqua's behavior, to me, clearly is interpreted as grieving. Well, this summer, Talaqua became a mother again. And researchers listed this new baby as J57. The southern resident population is now 73 individuals. That sounds good, but on reflection, when the killer whales were listed as an endangered species by the federal government in 2005, and that's our southern resident population was listed as endangered, the population stood at 88. There's been a sad decline. Scientists this summer have observed two additional pregnant females in the southern resident population. A source of hope, perhaps? Well, as we know, the threats and challenges to the killer whale population are numerous, not the least of which is the growing scarcity of their primary food, Chinook salmon. The recent removal of the Elwha River dams hopefully may increase the Chinook population. Is that another source of hope? And we know that ship noise, water pollution, harassment by humans pose additional threats. Even so, scientists, conservationists, and members of the public are hopeful yet cautious about the future of this newest member of the southern resident population, little J57, and his mother, Talaqua. Staying in the marine world, this week's conversation is with Janine Boire, executive director of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, about plastic pollution in the oceans and opportunities to help clean up our beaches. After this pre-recorded conversation from 2018, I have some updates on the issue to share with you. Recently released information on global cleanup efforts and their results, plus details how listeners can participate in the 2020 International Coastal Cleanup Day.
Janine, let's talk about plastics and the oceans and what can be done about it. I'm sure most of us have some understanding of the issue of plastic in the ocean and have seen some of those heartbreaking images. I always sort of think about with a sad smile, one of my favorite movies was the animated film Happy Feet.
Yes.
And there's a character in there. I think he's a rockhopper pigeon. He's got a great big yellow fleur. But he also has around his neck a necklace of a six-pack that he claims was gifted upon him and gave him magical powers from mythical alien beings.
Right.
And of course, ends up almost killing him. So that's kind of the images we carry around. And I know there's been a lot of talk about garbage patches, particularly the one in the Pacific Ocean. Tell me, what does a garbage patch look like?
Actually, We do often refer to the Pacific garbage patch, but there are many big masses of trash that have accumulated in oceans all around the world. And we often talk about them as one big mass, but they're actually more like plastic gyres, plastic soup.
Like there's a gyre in the North Pacific, there's a gyre in the South Pacific, where the currents essentially go round in this
right.
circle. There's one in the North Atlantic and then South Atlantic, and also one in the Indian Ocean. So do all those gyres have garbage patches in the middle of them?
Yes. And those are all, those many gyres are formed by the ocean currents. There are two massive plastic gyres in the North Pacific. One is just off the coast of Japan. The other is between Hawaii and California. And those are formed by the North Pacific subtropical convergence zone. Big words, but basically it's the ocean's currents that create these vortexes, and the plastics and the other debris gets trapped in these vortexes and can't escape.
Janine brought me a bottle today. Would you describe what this is? It's a glass bottle with really ugly things inside it. But what is that?
This was actually a gift, if you will, or a torch, if you will, that was given to me by Ann Murphy, the founding director of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, when I took the job and the mantle of executive director of the Marine Science Center. The jar contains a sample from the gyre between California and Hawaii. You can see floating plastics and other smaller plastics that are all suspended in the water, in the liquid. There's a couple of dead bugs in there. It's actually, as Nan pointed out earlier, it's pretty disgusting. But one of the things it makes clear that it is not a solid, it's a liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my mind's eye, when I first heard about the plastic island, if you will, or the gyre, in my mind's eye, I thought about a solid plastic chunk out there. But it's much more like a plastic soup, and it's in constant motion.
Give me a sense about how big are these things? Miles across? Many miles across?
Yes. And they change and they morph. And so it's really difficult to gauge how large anyone is at any given time. And not all of it is on the surface. It goes all the way down through all the layers of...
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, of course, when you think about those...
Think about a vortex,
and it's
a giant plastic vortex.
Wow. Is most of the stuff from like marine sources, or is it land sources?
Plastic is all human created. So it's all from land. All derives from the land. When you look at the makeup of the gyre, most of it is tiny, tiny bits of plastic called microplastics. And microplastics have many different sources. One of the sources is, for example, in consumer products, like the facial scrubs with tiny little plastic beads.
Oh, that are supposed to do good things for your skin and rub off. Yeah.
They're also sourced by larger plastic items that break up under the sun and wave action of the oceans. But a lot of what we find in both in the gyres and also on the beaches are nurdles. And these
nurdles?
Nurdles are the raw material.
Word, nurdles.
Nurdle. Well, it's a lovely word.
But
not
for
so
not
great.
So lovely
not
thing.
Not so
yeah.
lovely.
So what is it?
It is the raw material out of which most all plastic products are made. So tiny little, maybe 5 millimeter or less diameter plastic beads. And every consumer product, that's
initially
the raw material that is shipped around the world. And sometimes it escapes.
We're kind of at the global scale. And I guess maybe still staying global scale for a minute. I think we probably have a pretty good sense of why plastic is of concern to living systems. But can you just kind of briefly summarize what concerns scientists and conservationists?
One of the systemic issues is that these plastic soups, if you will, are blocking sunlight from getting to plankton that produce over half the oxygen on the planet. Over half the oxygen that we breathe comes from phytoplankton in the oceans. If nothing else, that seems like a reason that we should care pretty deeply as the oceans fill up with plastics. But in addition to that, plastics, as we've seen and talked about, they obstruct animals. They get wrapped around their necks. But also, animals ingest plastics.
Yeah, there have been some reports over this last year of particularly marine mammals being found with huge amounts of plastic.
Indeed.
I mean, and so much they can't digest real food because they're so stuffed full of plastic.
Right. It blocks their digestive system. It can block airways. There's also a concern that it carries toxins that the BPA
that stands for a long chemical name that I don't remember and don't care to remember. But anyway, BPAs, right?
BPA, and that has been linked to neurological illnesses as well as high blood pressure in humans.
I'm sort of a bit overwhelmed by the scale of the issue. Talk to me about the ubiquitousness of plastic and put some numbers and feelings
on
this.
When I started to try and understand, really started to get my mind around it, and when scientists estimate 18 billion pounds of plastic are put into the ocean every year, that's 18 billion.
I mean, it sounds like a huge amount, but what is 18 billion pounds of plastic?
When we talk in the millions or billions or trillions, our mind kind of goes numb. And I think that is systemically part of the barrier for us to both first understand and then to be clear enough to take action about it. Mm-hmm. And so here's another way to think about what really 18 billion pounds of plastic means. Imagine semi-trucks, bumper to bumper, from here in Port Townsend all the way to Key West, Florida, over 3,500 miles.
Okay. So that kind of helps. I can also almost barely get my mind around a row of semis here to Key West, Florida, packed full of plastic every year.
Well, the whole volume of the truck itself, not just what's in the container, but actually the whole volume.
Wow.
Yeah. Each semi-truck is 80,000 pounds. And when you think about that kind of scale, it starts to become overwhelming. And I think that shuts a lot of people down.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
I'm trying not to be completely and entirely overwhelmed by plastics. And I know the phrase, think globally and act locally.
Indeed.
And think forever and act now. I know that the Port Townsend Marine Science Center is involved in an international coastal cleanup. Can you tell us a bit about what that is and what your involvement will look like?
Yes. Actually, the Ocean Conservancy has been doing this for decades, over 30 years now. And what it is an international coastal cleanup that focuses on getting people out onto the beaches to pick up debris, in particular plastics. Last year, for example, 2017, as part of the annual event, hundreds of thousands, actually over 800,000 people, volunteers all over
worldwide, wow,
collected over 20 million pounds of trash from the beaches and waterways. Pretty inspiring.
That
so that's
is inspiring.
Another part of the solution is that collective action piece. So working together. And when we think about working together and seeing each other, it becomes more doable when you think about 800,000 people working on this worldwide and inspiring others to join them. It is really potentially a very powerful solution. But in addition to that, when public officials and private sector see that nearly a million people were out last year willing to do this, and the impact that they had, it sends them a message that people, their consumers and their constituents, care deeply. And it makes it more likely that we can look at economic drivers that can help move us from this plastic consumer economy to something more sustainable.
You know, that's really inspiring because one can think of beach cleanups or coastal cleanups as kind of like a fun day on the beach, but you pick up stuff and new stuff will come back fairly soon. And what good does that do? So to think about it in terms of the community effort and how it motivates a global community of people to say, we care about this.
Yes. And the Ocean Conservancy actually puts all of the data that's collected. So it's not just going and picking up trash. Mm-hmm. You bring the trash back to the center. First, you check in at the Marine Science Center's museum on the shore between 12 and 4. September 15th, Saturday, September 15th, between noon and 4. It's the day of action worldwide. Okay. And this is what we are choosing to do. And hopefully a lot of you listeners are going to be joining us. So you check in between noon and 4 at the museum of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center on the beach at Fort Worden. You get a clipboard and a bag or a bucket if you don't have it. And you go and collect your stuff off of
you
one of the beaches. You're designated
beaches.
You're
so
designated
to
a beach
covered,
so that everybody doesn't go to the same beach. And then we ask you to bring all that stuff back. We open it all up and we look at what it is. That data then goes into a website that tracks what's collected where. And then that data shows up on the website so that people can see what was the derivation. I mean, mm-hmm. where did all this trash come from?
And
what is
it?
And what's where? And what ends up where? So it helps people understand and it makes it much more tangible.
There is so much to talk about with plastics, and we didn't even begin to touch about on the sort of what's going on in our Salish Sea area. So Janine is kind enough that she'll do a part two, because we have to close this conversation and go on for the rest of the show. So thanks so much, and I'm looking forward to the second half of this conversation too.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Nan.
Well, as always, Janine is a wonderful person to talk to, knowledgeable and caring, and a great leader of the Marine Science Center. To update that conversation, for more than the past 30 years, the Ocean Conservancy has sponsored this International Coastal Cleanup Day. It's part of a much larger effort to protect our oceans and the creatures living in them, and those actions protect us as humans as well. The Ocean Conservancy's most recent report on plastic trash in the ocean and on the coastal cleanup results was just released. Let me summarize some of the highlights. First, what does some of the new scientific research from 2019 and very early 2020 on marine debris tell us? Well, the news isn't particularly good. Microplastics were discovered in ice cores taken from Antarctica, floating in the deep sea, and in the stomachs of deep sea organisms. Microplastics were found in the air throughout large cities such as London, England. And these airborne plastic particles were shown to enter the soil, rivers, and the sea through rain and snow. Microplastics and even the smaller nanoplastics were found in many of the food and beverage products consumed by humans. Increasing numbers of microplastics were shown to reduce the biodiversity of species living in the soil at the bottom of lakes and ponds. In laboratory tests, increasing percentages of microplastics reduced the survival of fish hatchlings. And microplastics were implicated in the extinction of several zooplankton species. Remember, as Janine said, microplastics can derive directly from nurdles, those things that are used to create plastic forms, or from the corrosion of larger pieces of plastic. Secondly, the results of the 2019 International Coastal Cleanup Day. Nearly a million volunteers in 116 countries collected over 20 million pounds of trash, much of it plastics, which I think is impressive. That's a lot of people, a lot of different countries, and all in one day. In the state of Washington, nearly 3,000 volunteers collected over 21,000 pounds of trash from just over 300 miles of our coastline. Kind of for reference, that's about a tenth of the state's entire coastline. Of the trash collected, most commonly collected items were food wrappers, cigarette butts, plastic bottles, caps, and lids, plastic bags, and takeout food containers, and plastic serving utensils made their very first appearance, that's the first appearance in over 30 years, on the most often collected list. Probably not a good sign. The good signs are you can help. You can join Port Townsend Marine Science Center in this year's International Coastal Cleanup Day. It's this coming Saturday, September the 19th. Meet at the museum entrance at 9:30. Bring gloves, dress for the weather, wear appropriate footwear. And of course, please follow all COVID safety guidelines. Wear your masks and maintain social distancing. Volunteers will return to the Science Center by 1:30 to weigh trash collected. And if you can't stay that long, you can return earlier. Get more information and pre-register by following the link on the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website. And the pre-registration helps. So as I think as Janine might have mentioned, that allows folks to distribute volunteers throughout a number of beaches. Hope you can plan to do that. Well, let's hear that mystery sound again. That was the song of the black-headed grosbeak. The whistled song rises and falls like an American robin's, but it's longer, sweeter, and less choppy in its phrases. It's sometimes linked to that of a drunk, or perhaps more positively, operatic robin. And both males and females sing. Black-headed grosbeaks breed in our region, and then they migrate south to central Mexico, where they are one of the very few predators of monarch butterflies. Toxins in the monarch make them poisonous to most birds, but black-headed grosbeaks and a few others can eat them. Black-headed grosbeaks adapted by feeding on monarchs in roughly 8-day cycles, apparently to give themselves time to eliminate the toxins before feeding again. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. And I must say, the entire Nature Now team certainly enjoys creating these shows for you. If you have any interest in joining the team, we'd love to talk to you. You can contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, ideas, or want to volunteer. Email us at naturenow, that's one word, naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM on Thursdays at 5:05 p.m. on Saturdays at 12:30. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. And the ending music is Tom Lehrer's pithy, humorous parody in calypso style called Pollution. It was released in 1967, just a few years before the first Earth Day in 1970.
If you visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. The halibuts and the sturgeons being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air, and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe, long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink. Throw out your breakfast garbage, and I've got a hunch that the folks downstream will drink it for lunch. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.